Welcome to today's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me is my colleague Peter Flaherty, and we are rolling right along in this college baseball season. It's been a wild season so far, Peter, and I feel like this weekend, the past weekend, was perhaps the most wild one yet. You had number one Arkansas and number two Clemson both lose a series that opens the door for Texas A&M to move up to number one. They are the third team to hold the number one ranking so far this season, joining Wake Forest and Arkansas. And they did it with a thoroughly commanding sweep of Vanderbilt, a team that we had ranked in the top five. Kind of an all over the place weekend. I guess, Peter, let's start with the new number one team. We'll get to the implications for Arkansas and for Clemson and for Alabama and NC State, the two teams that beat the top two teams in the country. We'll get to that in a bit. But like, I guess first, let's talk about the new number one team in the country, the Aggies, a team that you and I both believe is the most complete team in the nation.
I was going to say, you took the words right out of my mouth with the first point I was going to make, and that is that I am a pretty firm believer in that, you know, A&M is the most complete team in the country alongside, you know, Tennessee and maybe a couple of others. But I was mentally prepared, like, going into the weekend, I would have been very impressed with A&M had they come away with, you know, even a series win, no matter what that looked like. But the fact that they swept Vanderbilt in such emphatic fashion, they outscored them 36-6. You know, that was super, super loud. The lineup is as deep as any team in the country, I think. The pitching staff is outstanding. You have two legit weapons in the rotation, too, you know, with Ryan Prager, who has thrown the ball exceptionally well. And you look towards the bullpen, and Chris Cortez has found, I think, a perfect home where, you know, you can have him go for one to two innings at a time. You can stretch him out for four. So I thought it was just such a complete sweep, and A&M flashed the immense depth that they have on both sides of the baseball.
The way that they swept Vanderbilt, I thought, was very impressive, both just from the fact that they swept a team that we had ranked number five coming into the weekend. Like, that's that in and of itself is quite loud, but they just, you know, they dominated the series ultimately. That, you know, if you just look at the way they handled it, they came out, they punched Vanderbilt in the mouth right away, and they just kept punching. And the way the weekend started was walk, home run, home run. You can't ask for anything better than that from your offense. And the pitching staff with Ryan Prager, in the opener set the tone, and they just kept going from there. The way that A&M is able to put that kind of weekend together against a team of Vanderbilt's quality was really loud. And, you know, we both agree that they're as complete a team as there is out there. I don't know that, like, that makes them definitively better than, say, Arkansas or Clemson, you know, or Tennessee, you mentioned, as being right up there, or, you know, whoever. But what it does, I feel like where that's important, because, you know, Arkansas can pitch with anyone, and because they can outpitch anyone, it means they can beat anyone. But what A&M is able to do in terms of what they are on the mound, they're number two in the nation in ERA behind Arkansas. But if their pitching isn't quite as good on any given day, their lineup is there to pick them up. And they're an offense that really grinds out at bats, but also they have big time power hitters in Jace LaViolette and Braden Montgomery at the top of the lineup, hitting 2-3 back to back. And there are not many easy outs in the lineup. You're not going to have an easy time on the mound because of what you alluded to with, you know, like, they can mix and match. They can ask Cortez or Ashenback to go a little bit longer if they need the bullpen to do that. They just have a lot of options at their disposal, really, you know, again, around the entire diamond.
Yeah, well, and this is something you can't really say about a lot of teams. Maybe you can't say it about any team other than Texas A&M and a couple of others, but regardless of what kind of game they're in, whether it's a pitcher's duel, a slugfest, like, They can outpitch you. They can outhit you. Like, this is a team that is comfortable getting into any style of game and winning any style of game, which I think is super impressive. And you mentioned the lineup. It's this, I think, perfect melting pot of returners. You have a couple of impact freshmen. You have experienced transfers. You have star power with Lavalette and Montgomery, like you touched on. And then on the pitching staff, there are really no weak links. It is just a super impressive, super complete team up and down. And I think the cherry on top to it all is the team chemistry that they have. Like, you can tell just from even watching them on TV how much they love playing with each other and how much fun they're having, which I think is a little bit lost in today's game. And I think such an underrated quality for a team to have. And it kind of reminds me a little bit of last year's Wake Forest team. Like, you saw the positive energy they had, you saw how much they loved each other. And it goes beyond that. Like, it sounds like funny bringing it up, but like, Hayden Schott does a really funny Fungo Golf segment every week on his Twitter. It comes out every Monday. It's hilarious and a must watch. Like, they just have it all going on. And it's a really easy team to pull for. And they have the talent to boot. So they've got the ingredients to be playing well into June.
A&M did not allow a run in the first 17 innings of the series. And because they run ruled Vanderbilt in the opener, that extends all the way into the third game. They scored 36 runs on the weekend. And this Vanderbilt pitching staff is good. They came into the nation ranked 10th in the nation in ERA, or came into the weekend 10th in the nation in ERA. So yeah, like everything you'd want from a team, A&M's doing it right now. Since that series loss against Florida a month ago now, they're 14-2 or 15-2 now after winning on Tuesday night. Like, the schedule from here is not terribly difficult. This weekend they're going to Alabama. We'll talk about that in a bit. They still have road trips to LSU and Ole Miss as well. Georgia and Arkansas come to College Station. Things are setting up relatively well. That series against Arkansas is the final weekend of the regular season. I wish it was earlier, because I fear by that time in the season, neither A&M nor Arkansas is going to have a ton to play for. Like, they might be playing for the SEC title, but if that's not on the line for whatever reason, I don't think either team is going to really push it at that point. They're going to be setting themselves up for postseason play. And I do feel a little bit of regret that's the way that the schedule sets up, but it is what it is. And we'll just have to deal with it. On the flip side, Peter, Vanderbilt, I don't know how, like, it was a bad weekend. There's no way, like, everything we just said, like, they didn't score a run until Sunday and they gave up 36 runs. Like, there's no way you can spin that positively. It was always going to be an uphill battle going into College Station, though. They just got beat by a team that's better than them on the road. And I guess the biggest concern that I have about Vanderbilt right now is they're not very well proven outside of Hawkins Field. And their pitching staff, which mostly is outstanding, and we've talked about it plenty, but it also clearly can be gotten. You know, Bryce Cunningham is a guy that was, you know, one of the, I don't want to say biggest surprises of the first half of the season, but he was certainly a pleasant to see how much progress he made, and him breaking out really was helping Vanderbilt. And he's now getting hit a little bit more. Devin Fittrell has missed the last few weeks. He should be back quite soon, but you know, it just hasn't, I don't know. They're a good team, not a great team right now. And maybe there's room for them to get to great, but right now they just kind of are what they are, it feels like.
Yeah. And coming into the weekend, like I alluded to, I expected A&M to come away with a series win, but I did not expect it to go the way that it did. And I think, coming out of it, it is concerning for Vanderbilt. They were overmatched really in every facet of the game. But I think it is more of a testament to how talented A&M is. And then shifting back to Vanderbilt, like, they're 3-7 right now in true road games. It's a small sample size, but it's not an encouraging one. Bryce Cunningham and Carter Holton, I think, are still a really strong 1-2 punch in the rotation. And then they've kind of shuffled in Grayson Carter there on Sundays recently. And like with Grayson Carter, if he's throwing strikes, that's the key to everything. If he's around the zone and has good feel for his thunderous stuff, like, he is one of the toughest at bats for opposing hitters in all of college baseball. And then with the lineup, it is still a pretty deep unit. The emergence of Braden Holcomb recently, it has paid, I think, pretty big dividends. He had a really good weekend down in College Station. He swung the bat well last night or two nights ago against Lipscomb. But it is not as dangerous as I think myself and maybe you thought it was a couple of weeks or a few weeks into the season. I still don't really think there's an easy out there, 1-9, but it is not as scary, I think, as it was. And I think my biggest concern is just a little bit worried about how they play away from home. I think the 3-7 record is pretty telling. And, you know, if they have to go on the road for a super regional, if they don't get a top 8 national seed and they make it to a super regional, I'm really curious to see how they do. But the overall talent level that they have on the roster, there is still the ceiling for this year's team is incredibly high. I just think they need to kind of right the ship a little bit here. And they, you know, this weekend, they're home against Florida. Like, that's a really interesting series to me, because obviously you look at Florida and the record is the record, but there's still talent there. And then next weekend, they're home against Mississippi State. Like, if they can get back on track with a couple of series wins, that's huge.
The schedule for Vanderbilt the rest of the way is Florida, Mississippi State at home, like Peter said, then at Georgia, home against Tennessee, at Kentucky. They really need to make some hay the next few weeks. Going to Georgia is not easy for any team, particularly a team that, you know, we're questioning its ability to play on the road. But if you're trying to host, they gotta make some hay here. And then getting Tennessee at home is significant. Going to Kentucky at the end of the year, not optimal. We'll talk about the Cats here some more. But Vanderbilt right now is on the host bubble, and that's not a comfortable place for a team that is 3-7 at on the road, but has won 15 straight at home. Like, it's not really where you want to be. But on the upside, like, I did include them as a host in this week's projected field of 64. So it's all still in front of them. They just have to go out and win the SEC games. And that starts again these next couple of weeks with being at home. All right, let's address the Arkansas and the Clemson of it all now, Peter. It was the first time since 2022 that number one and number two lost a series on the same weekend. You had Arkansas going down at Alabama, and Arkansas won the first game behind Hagan Smith. They lose in extra innings on Saturday, and then they get shut out on Sunday. First time this season they've been shut out, but basically they got outpitched in Tuscaloosa. Maybe not outpitched. Maybe that's the wrong way to look at it. But Alabama beat them at their own game. They beat them in pitcher's duels. Meanwhile, Clemson loses the first two games against NC State. It was very sloppy. It made like 7 errors over the first two games. Just kind of uncharacteristic stuff for the Tigers. And then they bounced back with a 7-0 win in the finale. But that game was scoreless for the first 6 innings. So, I mean, it was a really tight series in Clemson as well. Looking at those two teams, at Arkansas and Clemson, Peter, which weekend concerns you more?
Probably Clemson. I feel like you feel a similar sentiment, but they started off their week with a loss to South Carolina Upstate, which was shocking. But again, it's a midweek game. You can't really put much stock into it. But like you said, outside of Sunday's win, it was a pretty tough showing for him against NC State. And I think NC State's a good team. I don't think that they are a great team by any stretch. And we had kind of, it wasn't like I was expecting this weekend to come for Clemson, but we had hinted at it, I guess, in the lead up, where we kind of felt like the carriage was turning a little bit into a pumpkin. And I still think they're an excellent team with Omaha upside, but like the starting pitching outside of Aiden Nock hasn't been as sharp. Ethan Darden is still a quality option to turn to. The bullpen faltered. We mentioned the free bases. I think with Clemson, like their week concerned me more. I'm curious to see how they come out and look in the next 3 weeks, because I think they have a chance to look really, really good in the lead up to what is going to be a really big series at Wake Forest. They go Pitt, Louisville, Georgia Tech in that order. Like, I don't know. I feel like they got to go 3-0 in those series. I know at Louisville is always tricky for every team every year, but that feels like a series they have to go 3-0. And then with Arkansas, like you said, Alabama just kind of beat them at their own game. Like, they got outstanding pitching, especially from freshman Zane Adams on Sunday. 8 shutout innings, 5 Ks. He was exceptional. Alton Davis was great in relief. Every bullpen arm was excellent, mostly. And I think also with Arkansas, like, you can't put any stock into midweek games, but I was waiting for a game like Tuesday night to happen to them and be thrust into it. They go down 7-0 against Texas Tech. They're pitching, or really just their starter didn't have it. Ben Bibee, who had been great up until that point, he didn't have it. They get in a hole early, and I'm like, okay, how are the bats going to respond? Because it's a team that is extremely pitching heavy, and they go out and they come back and they win 9-8. So I thought that was huge, proving that they can win games like that. Texas Tech, I know, isn't a pitching heavy team, and it's going to look a lot different if they get into one of these, you know, on a weekend or in a regional. But I thought that was super encouraging. And the pitching staff alone, like, yes, the bats were kind of dead this weekend, and Alabama outpitched them, credit to them, but this pitching staff is good enough to take them to Omaha. I have no doubt about that. Like, they can win every single game on pitching alone.
I guess I felt a little more concern for Arkansas because I'm willing to write off Clemson's loss as being a little goofier in terms of like errors and stuff. But Clemson lost at home. You know, Arkansas had to go on the road to a place where, like, Tuscaloosa is just proven to be a very difficult place to play this year. Clemson is not the cleanest team out there. Like, this isn't the first time I've sat here and been like, well, like, if only they had just played cleaner baseball, like, this would have turned out differently. Like, they're not a bad fielding team, but they're also not a great one. And so, maybe, you know, they're actually 175th in the nation in fielding. I was unaware that it had gone that far down. So, you know, maybe that's actually a bigger concern, that, you know, these errors are not isolated incidents anymore, that's something that really needs to be examined. Neither one of them is in a bad spot. Arkansas actually still leads the SEC West. They're 12-3. A&M's 11-4. You know, Clemson is 11-4 in the ACC, and, you know, they're doing just fine. Like, that means they're not technically in first place, but both of these teams are just fine and will be just fine. But they both did get exposed a little bit this weekend, and not necessarily in new ways, but it does show that, you know, hey, like, they are beatable. This was the first series loss for both of them, and future opponents. You know, I don't know that you're going to be able to replicate either situation, but it does give perhaps a little bit more confidence to future opponents having to face down those two teams.
Yeah, I just one more point. I think, and you brought it up, the most important thing to mention, like, when you pose that question, I'm not genuinely concerned about either of these teams. Like, Clemson is an outstanding, well-rounded team. Like, they've got 3 extremely winnable series coming up to get back on track and build up some momentum. I don't know if I see them lose. Like, they are squarely in contention to repeat as ACC tournament champions. Arkansas is similarly, like, but like you said, it was a little bit for, I think, Arkansas especially, because it was their first series loss of the year, like, kind of a Rocky IV, like, the Russians cut moment for other teams. So it'll be interesting to see how they pan out. But, like, I'm not similar, just like you, I'm not at all worried about either of these teams. Like, if I were picking my personal 8 for Omaha, both would probably be in there right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not backing off of that for either team. The flip side is what happened for NC State and Alabama with the series win. And I think it was a bigger deal for Alabama. It was a big deal for both of them. But Alabama came into the weekend at 4-8 in the SEC, staring down consecutive weekends at home, but consecutive weekends against Arkansas and A&M. They're a team that doesn't play well on the road either. They're 3-7 in true road games. And if they'd lost after losing on in the opener, I think they'd lost 5 of their last 6. So that's all a recipe for things to start going sideways. And, you know, if you don't win one of those home series against Arkansas or A&M, you have to make it up with something happening on the road. And this team, again, just has struggled to do that. So for them to get that kind of marquee series win, I think that's a really big deal. NC State was, you know, they've just been hanging around 500. They had been in the ACC. They had had a couple difficult weeks, you know, in there. They also were on a skid. They'd lost 5 in a row going to Clemson. They have UNC at home this weekend. And, you know, you don't want to take a situation where they'd lost like 7 of 8 into this weekend against UNC. So to get those two wins, to get to 10-8 in the ACC, particularly with how difficult the back half of their schedule is, it's UNC, Florida State, home against UNC, at Florida State, at Virginia, home against Wake. Like, this is a team that has some really difficult series coming up. So for them to get that confidence boost of going to Clemson and getting a series win, also a really big deal. However, they did lose Sunday, and then they lost again on Tuesday in extra innings to Campbell at home. So things are, maybe it's of a fleeting nature, but they always will at least have this to fall back on and remember.
Yeah, no, like if you're forming a gauntlet in the ACC, like if you're making a schedule, these next 5, like those are 5 of the toughest series that you can find. And also where 2 of them are on the road when you go down to Dick Howser Stadium and on the road to UVA, like those are going to be extremely, extremely difficult tasks. But even with losing the finale and a tough midweek extra inning loss to Campbell, it was so huge for NC State to win that series. Like similar to Bama, it was snowballing on them a little bit. They'd entered the weekend with 5 losses in a row. You go down, you go to Clemson and you lose that series. And then it's just kind of, you know, it's a really tough spot to be at. And I think that, again, they're an interesting team and an intriguing team. And we saw, you know, what they can do and against Clemson. I think offensively, like the 2 transfers, Alec Makarewicz and Garrett Pennington, they've been outstanding for them. Like there have been some nights where Pennington and Alec have been the entire offense, like whether it's the 2 of them together or one on their own, like they've supplied the entirety of the offense. Josh Hogue has been a really nice transfer piece. He's a sophomore. Jacob Cozart and Eli Serrano, I think if they were like their production levels, I think need to take off a little bit as we enter the home stretch for them to achieve their ceiling, whatever that is. Like that's like their quote unquote star power, and they need more out of those guys. Like there's no doubt about it. And then on the pitching staff, it's still kind of like a typical NC State staff where it's like you have a few good weapons and then the bullpen gets a little iffy. But one guy who I want to shout out is right-handed pitcher Derek Smith. And you look at the ERA and you see 7-2 and you look at the back of the baseball card stats and they're nothing crazy, but he has really figured it out the last couple of weeks. He has been largely untouchable and unhittable in the late innings, and I think that is going to be a huge piece for them going forward. Like he has been rock solid. He was excellent in 2 appearances at Clemson. He was really good again on Tuesday night against Campbell. Like that's a name to circle and someone to watch going forward. And Shane Van Dam has been great. Jacob Duden has looked really, really good at times. Like there are interesting pieces. I just don't know like what is the ceiling of this team. And I think it's like regional, like potential regional dark horse, depending on who they match up with. I just think they're a little bit lacking in the depth department. And then with Bama, like we had talked about it last week where you're staring down, like you have to win one of those next 2 series, and those next 2 series are Arkansas and A&M. And it's like, holy cow, like how are they going to pull this off? And they go out, they take two from Arkansas, which was massive. And then similar to NC State, of course, they lost last night at home against UAB. So, like, of course that happened, but they need Ben Hess to get back to Ben Hess. That is going to be on a pitching staff that's already thrown the ball really, really well. They have two other really good starters in Greg Ferrone and Zane Adams now. If Hess can return to form, that's going to be massive, because the bullpen has largely been really solid. If they can get Hess to get it going, I'd feel a lot better about him.
Yeah, I mean, that's a preseason All-American that has an ERA north of 6 right now. And, you know, it's just been kind of strange to see him struggling as much as he has. But if they could get it right there, you know, that would be a big deal for them. And even if not, they have proven that there is depth behind him. So, you know, it's not the craziest thing to feel like he's maybe moving in a better direction. It just hasn't all come together for him. And if they can figure it out, like, the bullpen for Alabama held the Razorbacks down all weekend. And, like, I get it, Arkansas is not the world's greatest offense, but the pieces are there. Alton Davis is really good at the back end. Like you said, Peter, they've got two starters behind Hess who are pitching really well right now. You know, it's an intriguing team if they can, you know, find some of that mojo that they were rolling with early in the season. But, you know, regardless, certainly a really, really big series win for them. And now they, as their reward, they get to face the number one team in the country yet again. So great times in Tuscaloosa.
At least they get him in Tuscaloosa, though.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, much better to have them there than have to go on the road. Imagine if they had, like, done that at Arkansas. Like, if this were the reverse, if this was happening next year, they go into Baum Walker and somehow scrape out a series win, and then it's like, all right, go face the number one team in College Station now. Like, that's that would be a brutal back-to-back.
God bless. They'd be hearing a lot of rattling bog down there.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we're going to come back and focus on the weekend ahead, I suppose I should say, which looks pretty exciting, both in the SEC. We've been very SEC heavy to this point, but SEC, ACC, Big 12, some big series coming up this weekend, and we'll get to them here in a second. But first, check this out.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. That's why I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America. It allows me to do everything on one website. I get quality candidates. I can schedule them. I can interview them. I can screen them. I can send messages to them, all within Indeed. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, Peter, we have another premium series with two SEC teams that we have not touched on yet. That is Kentucky hosting Tennessee. Just a absolute, showdown of SEC East teams. Although it is first versus second, but Kentucky is going to be in first place no matter how this weekend goes. They're 14-1. Incredibly, they have blown through the first half of SEC play with just one loss, and that loss is against Missouri. It's at Mizzou. That is their one loss, which is you know, all the more mind blowing that, that is the only thing holding them back from being 15-0. Tennessee comes in at 10-5 in the SEC. They just swept LSU at home. I think it's really significant that this series is going to be at Kentucky. Kentucky is, as we've talked about before, a little more pitching heavy, and you know the ballpark they're going to play in this weekend is more pitcher friendly than if they were in Knoxville. So I think home field advantage, no matter what in the SEC, has proven to be very important this year. But I think probably all the more so this weekend that Kentucky gets to stay at home.
Oh yeah, 100%. Well, like Kentucky's been good everywhere they've played. I mean, you mentioned it, 31-5, 14-1 in the SEC. They've been pretty dominant. They're especially good at home, though. I think that this is going to be more of a test and a big time like barometer as to how good Kentucky is with how they play this weekend. I probably right now would give the edge to Tennessee, like we mentioned at the start of the podcast. I think when it comes to complete teams, it's them and A&M for who I think are the two most complete teams in the country. Like they can really hit it. They can really swing the bats well. Like 1 through 9, there's no one easy in there. They've got star power with Blake Burke, Billy Amick, Christian Moore. You kind of go up and down and you're like, goodness gracious, like there's no breaks in here, and they just wear down opposing pitching staffs. And then on the mound, the rotation that they've been trotting out with AJ Russell being banged up, has, I think they've found kind of the secret sauce here, where they go Beam on Saturdays, they go Sechrist on Sunday. AJ Causey has kind of been used almost as a second starter at times. And then there's kind of just a wild card starter, it seems, every weekend. And everyone has thrown the ball well. Like Drew Beam has looked exactly like Drew Beam. AJ Causey is such a difficult and unique look from the right side. And then Xander Sechrist just, he pounds the zone, stays off the barrel of opposing hitters. And then they, you know, Nate Snead in the back end, he's, you know, he throws absolute noise. He's a shutdown back end reliever. And then with Kentucky, like you said, it's kind of a classic Kentucky team. Like I think that the strength is obviously the pitching, that 1-2 punch on the rotation with Dom Nyman and Mason Moore. That's really, really dynamic. They're going to have their work cut out for them this weekend with Tennessee. But those are two guys that you have to feel really confident in giving the ball to. And then on the lineup side, like Ryan Waldschmidt, I think is super, super underrated, both with how good of a player he is in general. And then also on the draft side, like he is a super intriguing guy with a pretty solid set of tools. Nick Lopez has been excellent. Like there are, and they play and they really put the pressure on opposing defenses. They're not afraid to play small. They'll take extra bases. They'll steal. They really make the game fast on opposing teams. And I think they'll be able to feed off of what should be an outstanding crowd this weekend as well. But I probably give the edge to Tennessee, but I think that we're in for a really hard fought, three game series here that will probably come down to Sunday.
I'm going edge Kentucky. I'm buying in here. The only team in the country with more wins than Kentucky is A&M. They win everywhere. I am most impressed over the last 2 weeks at the diversity they've shown in how they can win. 2 weeks ago, when they swept Alabama, they did it all. It was all about their pitching. Like they completely shut down Alabama's bats, allowed 3 runs in the series. Then they go to Auburn last weekend, and they score 28 runs. They blast 11 home runs. You know, we talk so much about how like, oh, Kentucky, the offense is different, small ball, speed, blah, blah, blah. They just went down to Plainsman Park and hit 11 home runs. And look, I get it. Auburn's pitching staff is not that great right now. Auburn as a team is not that great right now. And that ballpark is an offensive ballpark. But, you know, that all that said, like they went out and they played the kind of game that they needed to play to win those games and showed a different dimension to the offense. And I just was really impressed by the total contrast in back-to-back weeks. Now they're back home. Obviously they're really comfortable there. Tennessee is a really tough opponent. Like having Billy Amick back in the lineup is a really big deal for them. And just the way that Tennessee is going to come in with plenty of confidence. Like, they also know the only team with more wins than Tennessee right now is A&M. So I say that by the time you listen to this, Arkansas might also have more wins than both of those teams. But as I'm saying it, it's still true. I don't even know that it comes down to styles this weekend, because I think if Tennessee is forced into a pitcher's duel, like, they can probably play that game. And if Kentucky is forced into playing offensive, they showed last weekend that they can do that as well. So I really don't even know what to expect. I just, right now with Kentucky, them being at home, I'm going to back the Batcats.
I like it. And I, again, it's going to be a coin flip, and is mentally to me as well. And one more bat I want to shout out for him is Ryan Nicholson, the Cincinnati transfer. I think he has been so huge for them in the middle of the order. And you talk about driving the ball. He leads the team with 11 home runs. He also leads the team with 37 RBIs. He's a big-time left-handed bat. He's been so huge to kind of balance it all out. So I'm really looking forward to this weekend and seeing how they stack up.
All right, let's flip over to the ACC, where we have a couple intriguing series. We have Florida State going to Wake. Peter mentioned that one earlier. And we have UNC going down the road to Raleigh to take on NC State, as I mentioned. Peter, let's start with Florida State and Wake Forest. Florida State had a huge week last week. They go 4-0 against Florida and Miami. They complete sweeps of both of their in-state rivals for just the second time in program history and the first time since 1960. Neither Peter nor I were alive back then. College baseball was also dramatically different back then. So massive week for Florida State. Now, obviously, Florida and Miami are not operating at the peak of their powers. We can acknowledge that, but that's not taking away anything from Florida State's delight in sweeping their two rivals. They face a difficult task, though, going to Wake Forest, because Wake, for all its struggles early in the season, does seem to have really righted the ship. Nick Kurtz continues his absolute tear. Wake did lose on Tuesday to UNC Wilmington. It's a tough, weird loss for them. They're going back home where they play very well, having been on the road for two straight weeks and going 5-1 against Virginia Tech and BC. Also notable, I don't know exactly what Florida State's rotation is going to look like, but they have missed Connor Whitaker and Cam Leiter. They missed them last weekend. Leiter has actually missed his last two starts. The last I saw from Link Jarrett made it sound like Leiter was working his way back. But again, I don't know if he'll be ready for this weekend. Probably going to be a pretty offensive series, no matter what Florida State runs out there on the mound. Just these two teams are really good, and they're going to play in Winston-Salem and the weather's heating up. But this one should be a really fun series.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking for the best pitching matchup in the country, look no further than Winston-Salem on Friday night, where you're going to get Jamie Arnold against Chase Burns. I think that's going to be the only game of the series where runs are at a little bit of a premium. I'm really curious to see how Florida State looks and which arms, like, they're going to need some arms to really, really step up and answer the bell if they want to come out of here with a win, especially if Leiter and Whitaker are both still on the shelf. Like, Andrew Armstrong has looked really good. Carson Dorsey has as well. And they can really swing it, too. I know we give a lot of credit to Wake Forest offense, and rightfully so. Like, Nick Kurtz right now is playing on beginner mode. I can only imagine how good he feels right now in the box. Merrick Houston is swinging it. Seaver King is Seaver King. And then those two underrated pieces that, like, we kind of touched on in the beginning of the year is, you know, oh, hey, they're off to nice starts. But, you know, they've now sustained that for the better half of the season is Adam Tellier and Jack Winnea. Like, those are two legit guys as well. So Friday night, it's going to be an absolute dandy of a game between Arnold and Burns. And kind of the rest of the weekend, with Wake being at home, how tough their lineup is, the kind of question marks surrounding Florida State's pitching staff. I almost lean Wake Forest a little bit. They're feeling it ever since that UNC sweep on Easter weekend. They've completely flipped a switch. I know they have a game two loss at BC, a one-run loss, and then they lose a weird one against UNCW on Tuesday. But I think they're feeling really, really confident. Josh Hartle has, like, I think underratedly thrown the ball better the last few weeks. It feels like inevitable where we get, again, a 6 or 7 inning shutout to 1 run performance where Josh Hartle looks like the Josh Hartle of last year. I don't know if it's going to be this weekend. It's going to be really tough against Florida State's lineup. But I feel like he's still due a little bit. And all these arms have their work cut out for him. Florida State can really swing it, but I kind of love the trajectory that Wake is on right now.
I feel pretty similarly to you. The one wrinkle that I would throw at you is that Florida State went super heavy lefty on the mound last weekend, to the point that I think it was just 2 innings, maybe it was 4 innings, were thrown by right-handers, which is remarkable. Now, Wake does about, their splits are, it looks like they're about even, but Nick Kurtz is left-handed, and you know that he does have much better numbers against right-handed pitchers. So maybe that will be a bit of a difference maker. Now, I mean, like, the lefties still have to go out there and make pitches, but it is potentially going to be a more challenging weekend for Nick Kurtz if Florida State again runs out that strategy of basically just throwing left-handed pitching.
Yeah, without a doubt. Like, Jamie Arnold is going to be difficult on every single hitter that he faces for the rest of his college career. So that one is a difficult matchup in and of itself. But you mentioned, like, Florida State does have a handful of reliable, at least to a certain degree, relievers that they can trot out. So it, like, I agree that it is a an interesting wrinkle, especially when you're talking about quieting down or attempting to quiet down Nick Kurtz, who's been probably the best hitter in college baseball the last few weeks.
Now, we got UNC going to NC State. We talked about NC State. UNC just keeps rolling right along. They're 14-4 in the ACC. They swept Notre Dame. This is going to be a different challenge. They're also coming off of a loss on Tuesday against Coastal in extra innings at home. That was their first loss at Boschmer Stadium this year. So UNC looking to bounce back from that. It's a great rivalry series that these two teams have. No, the Tar Heels swept the series last year in Chapel Hill. They're 7-4 against the Wolfpack since the pandemic. I do like them to continue that run here. But like we said, NC State can be feeling some confidence, and they showed how good they are just last week. If NC State can find the right stuff on the mound, and they did most of last week, again, like, Clemson did not score. Like, they did a good job on the mound last week, did NC State. They can recapture that magic at home this weekend. I do feel pretty good about their chances, but doing that against UNC's offense is no easy task.
Yeah, for me, I lean Tar Heels pretty heavily here. For NC State, like you said, I think that they're going to have to win it on the mound. And, you know, you get a rivalry series, you get all the, like, you know, you can throw the records out. I think it's going to be a good series regardless. And I know UNC is coming off a hard-fought loss at Coastal. And NC State, I know they built up some momentum last week, but it wasn't – I don't think it's as much as it could have been, just given, you know, that you drop the finale and then you lose a long one last night or on Tuesday against Campbell. I don't know. I think UNC's offensive firepower, when you look at Casey Cook, Ozuna, Parks Harbor, has been outstanding. The Georgia transfer, Vance Honeycutt. You know, Vance Honeycutt. He's one of the most, if not the most, tooled up player at the college level. That's going to be a difficult task for the NC State pitching staff to handle. And then you look at UNC's pitching staff. I like that weekend rotation a lot with DeCaro and Shea Sprague. Like, Shea Sprague is lefty strike thrower, pitchability guy, can eat innings for you. And then Folger Bose as well, struggled recently, but he's also a really good arm. And those freshmen have, them stepping up and not pitching like freshmen has been so huge for UNC early on. And with NC State, I feel like they probably win a game this weekend. I don't know. I think that UNC's pieces on both sides of the baseball are going to be a little bit overwhelming. I find it really hard to believe that they don't win the series.
So the way you're talking about UNC, and I don't disagree with pretty much any of that, UNC 14-4, they are you know, a game and a half ahead of Clemson, three ahead in the win column, even in the loss column, because they've played three more games. They're 14-4. They're in first place in the ACC. Do you like them to hold off Clemson to win the ACC? Are they your ACC favorite at this point?
Regular season or tournament?
Regular season. The ACC tournament is maybe a little easier to predict than some other ones because of the way the tournament works. But let's focus on the regular season.
That's a great question, because both their schedules are pretty favorable. Like with UNC, you've got NC State, VaTech, Louisville, and then Duke, which actually is not very favorable when you come down to it. And then with Clemson, like Clemson's is pretty favorable, at least the next few weeks. You go Pitt, Louisville, Georgia Tech. You have that marquee series at Wake the second weekend of May, and then you finish up against BC at home. I kind of like Clemson. Like, the schedule lines up better. They're a really talented team, like we've hit on. UNC, I feel like the schedule is obviously tougher, completely contradicting what I had just said. You know, NC State is a tricky one. VaTech is a tricky one. Like, none of these series are gimmies. And I don't know if I can say the same about, like, Clemson. I feel really confident that they win. I feel very, very confident in stamping a series win on probably four of those for Clemson. And I don't know if I can say the same right now for UNC. And UNC is a really good team. I just talked them up pretty big. It's just, you know, Duke's a really good team. Virginia Tech is also a really good team. NC State is a rivalry series. That's never easy, and they're a solid team on their own. So I'd probably lean Clemson.
I think that's fair. I think that's where I go. I do really like this UNC team, though. I wish they played a series. They don't, so I guess we'll just have to hope they meet in the ACC tournament. But, you know, some big weeks coming up here for UNC. Having the advantage right now is significant, but like you said, the Clemson schedule is just sets up better for them than what UNC has. They still have to go out and win the games, as last week showed, but I gotta lean Clemson, even with the fact that they have to make up three wins in those three games that they have in hand. Let's go to the Sun Belt. You know, I was gonna say Big 12, but let's go to the Sun Belt. There's a massive series in the Sun Belt this weekend. We got first versus second as the Raging Cajuns go to Coastal Carolina. The Cajuns are 14-1. They haven't lost. They've won 14 straight Sun Belt games. They haven't lost since the Sun Belt opener against Arkansas State. Coastal, just 9-6 in the Sun Belt. They are the RPI darling of the conference, though. Part of that is because they have wins like they picked up on Tuesday against UNC. They have home field advantage here. I think that's massive because, as we know, Springbrook Stadium plays very offensive. And what the Cajuns do extremely well is pitch. Like, they were incredible on the mound last week against Marshall. They gave up one run. It was a solo home run on Friday night. And then they threw back-to-back one-hit shutouts against the Thundering Herd. You know, you couldn't ask for more on the mound. However, they only scored 6 total runs on the weekend. So I don't, the contrasting styles here are fascinating. I suppose you could look at it either way. You could say that Springbrook's might help the Cajuns offense because it's perhaps easier to hit there. You also might look at it from the flip side and say, well, that's going to neutralize the Cajuns' advantage on the mound. I don't know exactly how it's going to play out, but this series has my full attention this weekend.
Yeah. I mean, you brought up a few key points that I was going to echo. Like, it's so hard, like, it's such a hard one to figure out who might have the advantage, because you touched on it. Louisiana pitches extremely, extremely well. Last weekend, you mentioned it, they allowed one earned run, they allowed 7 hits, they struck out 32, and they've been doing it largely for the entire season. And they do have Kyle DeBarge as the big guy on offense, and then Trey LaFleur has also swung the bat well, and they have a few nice supplemental pieces. Like, if this was at Lafayette, I think I would feel a lot different about the series. But where you're going to Coastal, it's notorious for being a launch pad. Coastal is very comfortable playing there. I, like, I think it is going to give a little bit of a boost to the Raging Cajuns offense, but Coastal, as they kind of always can, they can also really swing it with Sam Antonacci, who's hitting over 400, looking the part of a likely top 10 round draft pick. Blake Barthol and Derek Bender also swinging it well. Caden Bodine has come on. Like, depending on how the weather shakes out, you know, the ball can really, really, really fly here. Like, anything you get up in the air is going to get out. And I think if these games take on more of a slugfest look, I would lean Coastal, but I also can't discount the fact for how well Lafayette has thrown it, both in the rotation with freshman Chase Morgan, Carson Fluno, Andrew Herman. Those guys have been nothing short of outstanding. And then they've also got a couple of legit guys in the bullpen too, with LP Langevin up to 97, Blake Marshall. It's such a fascinating series for so many reasons. I have no clue like where I lean, but it's going to be a very fun one.
It's also a really meaningful series from a, not just a standings perspective. There's a long way to go. The Sun Belt is very parity filled. Like, yes, the Cajuns have built this 5-game advantage, but their schedule really stiffens from here. Coastal's is no joke either. It's this weekend and then home against Troy and then at Southern Miss and then Georgia State before they finish at Marshall. And that's like, finally, they'll be looking at that one and saying, oh, finally, but it's on the road even. So neither team has an easy second half of conference play. If the Cajuns have any interest in hosting, and I'm of the belief that they can't do it, their RPI is north of 50 right now. But if they have any interest in getting into that hosting race, any designs on it, I should say, I'm sure they're interested, they have to start here. Just playing the series will be helpful to the RPI, but they could really use a couple wins here. Coastal has the RPI already, and I don't think they don't have to win the Sun Belt. A couple years ago, when Georgia Southern hosted, they didn't win the Sun Belt, and I was very strident in my belief that Georgia Southern wasn't going to host because they didn't win the Sun Belt. And how is the committee going to look at, you know, the Sun Belt, not regarded as one of the major conferences, and say, like, your non-champion can host? Well, the committee did it anyway. So there's plenty of evidence that Coastal doesn't have to win the league to host, that their RPI can carry the day. But that being said, if they were able to get a series win against the eventual champs, like if that's where this is going, that Louisiana wins this league, if Coastal still has that series win against them, I think that's a big feather in their cap as they go into the committee room, where they can say, look, it's not just a big RPI, this great RPI. We also have this marquee series win. So for both teams, I think that it carries a lot of weight. That combined with the fact that, you know, you've got the contrasting styles, you've got two great coaches in Matt Deggs and Gary Gilmore. Like, from every angle, this series looks awesome.
Oh, 1,000%. I'll be keyed in all three of those games. And with Coastal, in terms of the hosting race, this feels a little bit like UC Irvine and Santa Barbara from that perspective. Like, Coastal doesn't need this series if they want to host, but like you said, it'd be a really nice positive addition to its resume. Like, their schedule is really tough the rest of the way. Like, next week they go to Creighton for a Tuesday, Wednesday midweek series. That's very intriguing and also difficult. And then the Sun Belt, like you said, there are a lot of really good teams in the conference, and that schedule does not get easy at all, really, until the last weekend of the regular season. So they have their work cut out for them for sure over the last 5 weeks. And I'm very, very interested in seeing how they look against Louisiana's pitching staff, who to this point, like, when looking at Coastal's schedule, this will probably be the best collective pitching staff that it's seen to this point. Like, George Mason and Indiana and Duke, they saw good arms that weekend, but I think from a pitching staff as a whole, like, this will be the best that they've seen so far and probably for the rest of the year. So a very good barometer for its offense.
Louisiana is fourth in the nation in ERA, and that is not like a product of their schedule. Like they are quite good on the mound. So like you said, yeah, this is as good a collection of arms as Coastal has either seen this season, full stop, or really since like weekend one, or yeah, I guess really just weekend one, like Illinois, Ball State, and Cincinnati in weekend two. Like they again saw some good arms, but not what they're going to see this weekend. So very, very big test for both of these teams. Let's go to the Big 12. The big series last weekend was West Virginia and UCF. West Virginia gets the sweep. Three very tight games. The weather was goofy, very windy. There was some rain, especially on Friday. UCF looked a little uncomfortable anytime I tuned in. West Virginia was completely unbothered, and they go out and they get three big wins to stay atop the Big 12. Oklahoma, though, bounces back from a few tough weekends in a row with the sweep of Kansas State, so they are matching West Virginia at the top of the standings. And TCU showed some real signs of life as they win a series against Texas Tech at home. Peter, what intrigued you from the Big 12?
Probably West Virginia the most. Like, we had talked about that series going into it. Like, UCF was, they had vaulted themselves to 19th in the top 25. It was a huge test for a West Virginia team that had been playing really, really, really well. And I know that I'm just going to echo your sentiments here, because you've been all in on West Virginia really since the preseason. I loved your like subtle victory lap retweet of your quote on them before the year. And it's panned out really well. Getting JJ Weatherholt back has still proven to be just an immeasurable boost to the lineup. He did, however, get removed from Tuesday's game with an injury. Like,
he also got taken out Sunday.
Yeah, like that would suck if he's hurt again, for a number of reasons. Just, he's an absolute joy to watch play. And then from a West Virginia perspective, like, it's JJ Weatherholt. But they still have some really nice pieces around him. Sam White, like, it's a very gritty, grind out at bats type of lineup. Like, they move the baseball consistently. And then in the rotation, Derek Clark, I think, has thrown
on the broadcast, they put up a graphic that said four, but that was incorrect. It's three of the last four. What he's done, though, is gone nine in four straight.
Oh, because one went 10 innings, right?
One went extra innings, yeah. And he did not stay in. They got him out after nine.
Yeah, okay. So he's thrown at least nine innings in four straight starts. He's a workhorse left-hander, undersized, but like pounds the zone, stays off the barrel. Aiden Major, when he's on, like, he's looked the part of a legit Friday night ace for the Mountaineers. It's big time stuff. He's going to go really good in the draft this July. David Hageman in the back end of the bullpen. You look at the back of the baseball card and don't let the ERA fool you. He's up to 98. The really good secondary stuff. It's just such like a gritty, like lunch pail type of team. They just find ways to win, which is super valuable. Like, they can swing it, they can pitch really well. There aren't a whole lot of weak spots. I'd love to see what happens with Weatherholt long term, because that, I think, is a huge determining factor in how far this team can actually go. But again, I'm pretty all in on the Mountaineers, as you've been for the last 4+ months. And then with Texas Tech on the flip side.
Well, before we, like, so let's get to the slightly bottom of Weatherholt. We can't actually, because we don't know. But so on Sunday, I mentioned he left the game because he got hit in the ribs. And because he has this hamstring injury, it was a tie game. He gets hit in the ribs in, I think, the 10th inning. They put in a pinch runner. When he's healthy, he flies, but he's not fully healthy. So I think a combination of things. They just wanted to get the fastest runner in that they could. Also, he was DHing. Then on Tuesday, he was back at shortstop for the first time, and he gets lifted in the third inning after fouling a ball off, I think, and running down the line, and I guess it didn't feel great. Randy Mazey said in his in-game interview that JJ was hungry, and so they sent him across the street to Buffalo Wild Wings, because literally across the street from their ballpark is a B-Dubs. Not a sponsor, but could be. So I don't know where exactly that stands, but with JJ Weatherholt, this team is different. And yes, I have been all in on them. But the fact of the matter is they really did, they treaded water without JJ, and then they got him back and I was very excited and like, they've been incredible. But they do need him. Like, he's the reigning Big 12 player of the year. He was the guy that came in as the projected number one draft pick for a reason. Like, he is a difference maker. And yeah, if they don't have him, the ceiling of this team is a little bit different.
Yeah. And without a doubt, I don't know if Coach Mazie's vagueness is good or bad. I guess we'll find out soon.
And then like that could just be a, I don't want to say anything because I haven't had a chance to talk to the trainers. Like, he got taken out on the third. I don't know precisely when his mid-game interview happened, but like, we're talking about an inning or two later. Like, how much do they really know at that point? And instead of saying like, I don't know, I haven't had that conversation yet, he made a joke. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, we'll find out in due time, but with Tech, I'd feel so much better about them and way more excited about them had they come away with a series win at TCU. And then obviously last night against Arkansas, they blow a 7-0 lead. Like, they're a handful of pitches away from sitting really, really pretty right now, like potentially 28-10 above 500 in the Big 12. Weatherholt is such a big X factor every weekend, but especially this weekend going down to Texas Tech. I think it increases the upside of the offense like tenfold, because Texas Tech, again, is a very hitter-friendly ballpark, and they swing it really well in general, but especially down there in Lubbock. In typical Texas Tech fashion, like, it is a very offensive-heavy team. Like, it seems like everyone 1 through 9 can really drive the baseball. Like, TJ Pompey, blue chip freshman, they hit him in the bottom third of the lineup. And right now he's hitting .346 with 8 home runs, leads the team with 45 RBIs. Like, it is, you know, it is a pretty hellacious collection of guys for opposing pitchers. But on the flip side, I do like how, like, Aiden Major matches up, Derek Clark matches up, David Hageman matches up. Like, I don't know. And with how well West Virginia has been playing, and again, their offense, even without Weatherholt, they can swing it a little bit, and Texas Tech isn't necessarily a world-beating pitching staff, I kind of like the Mountaineers to continue to roll this weekend. I'm just a huge fan of how they've been playing, a huge fan of, you know, how they get it done. I lean them.
I think I agree with that. Texas Tech going to Lubbock is obviously very difficult. As we record here, they're beating Arkansas. We'll see if they can hold on today. It's a 1-run lead. It's not like they're bad away from home. They're about 500 away from home. They're much better at home. They're 18-3 in Lubbock. But West Virginia's as experienced going on the road as any team in the Big 12. They're not going to be intimidated. They've got all the momentum. You have to give them the advantage on the mound. If JJ plays, like, this is clear cut West Virginia for me. If JJ doesn't play, I feel less good about it. But yeah, I think it's fair to lean West Virginia. They've really, I mean, the way they've played in the Big 12 to this point has been really impressive. The other big series this weekend is TCU going to Texas. Like we said, TCU got that nice series win against Tech last weekend. Texas is, I don't even know how to, I don't know how to characterize Texas right now. What they did do last weekend is win a series at Houston. Then they lost on Tuesday to UTRGV for the first time in more than 50 years. School is not known as UTRGV at the time. They also gave up 17 runs, which apparently is the most runs Texas has given up in more than a decade, which was, I think it was more than 15 years even. Absolutely floored me. Like, teams in this era of college baseball give up 17 runs all the time. Louisville did it last night to Kentucky, and like, okay, you know, it happens. So that was impressive streak by Texas, but snapped now. This is the same team, though, that lost a series at BYU a couple weekends ago. LeBaron Johnson, projected to be the ace, was, you know, knocked out of that Friday spot. They pushed him back until Sunday last week, and they didn't even announce him as the Sunday starter. They left that as TBA and then started him. coming off of that loss on Tuesday, which David Pierce called embarrassing, like, I don't know what to expect. I do know that Texas at home is pretty hard to beat. Not a whole lot of teams have had success going in there, although BYU did. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know what TCU is either. You know, winning that series was very nice. Was that the start of something? Was that them playing much better at home than they do on the road? They're 16-4 at home. They're 3-9 on the road. I don't know. I don't know. And if I'm going to talk about how Texas lost on Tuesday, well, TCU went and lost at Abilene Christian. And I like that loss more than I like losing at home to UTRGV, but it's still not the way you want to go into this weekend.
And I feel like both teams really need a series win this weekend. I think TCU probably a little bit more than Texas right now. TCU still sitting at just 7-11 in the Big 12. Texas, on the other hand, is 9-6. Again, both are really difficult teams to figure out. I think with TCU, it's apparent at this point that for them to win games, it's got to be done on the mound. Outside of a couple of hitters in that lineup, it gets pretty thin pretty fast. But you go to their starting pitching, and Peyton Tolley has been excellent now for really the vast majority of the season. 3.9 ERA, 85 strikeouts in 50 innings. They have a lot of intriguing and reliable to a degree pieces around him. And you go to Texas, it's like kind of with Ben Hess in Alabama, for this team to maximize its ceiling, LeBaron Johnson at some point is going to have to get back to pitching like LeBaron Johnson. I think that's been a huge missing aspect of the team so far. And then offensively, like they can actually swing it pretty well. There are probably six legit weapons in that lineup. I'm a really big fan, especially of Jared Thomas and Jalen Flores, but it's such an interesting series. Like, I don't even know who to give the edge to right now. Like, Texas with home field advantage, I think, especially with the way that this season has played out just across college baseball, you'd much rather be home than going on the road, no matter who you're playing. But I think it's a fun rivalry series. It's going to be a great crowd in Austin. I lean Texas, but on Tuesday night, they gave up 25 free bases. Like, they're going to have to clean it up in pretty short order. So lean Longhorns. Like you, though, I don't really know what it's murky for both teams. So we'll see how it plays out.
I think that you said both teams need it. I think Texas actually needs it more. Part of it is because it's a home series and you have to use your home field advantage. But after this weekend, it's at Oklahoma, home against Oklahoma State, at UCF, home against Kansas. They are 9-6. Like, they've got that going for them in the Big 12, but their RPI is north of 70 now. The bubble is a mess. I don't even know how to like start parsing it, and that's fine. It's April 17. It's okay. But RPI issues do eventually need to be corrected. Meanwhile, TCU has the RPI. They're just 7-11 in conference play. But if they just avoid getting swept this weekend and finish the weekend, with 8 conference wins, then they're home against K-State. They're at Baylor. And they're home against West Virginia to finish. So, you know, you got a couple home series in there. They're not easy home series. And going to Baylor is suddenly more difficult than we realized it would be. They also have a bonus game against Baylor at home. Doesn't count as a conference game to the standings, but the selection committee will view it as a conference game. I really feel like TCU has a path here to get to like 14 Big 12 wins. And if their RPI is approximately where it is now, which is 36, like, that's probably going to get it done. So it's there for them. Like, it would really help to win this series, but I feel like Texas needs this more strongly, especially after your coach on Tuesday tells reporters that you suffered an embarrassing loss. Like, maybe Kirk Sarlous said that too, but I didn't see it. So yeah, like, I just feel like Texas needs the response this weekend. Elsewhere this weekend, some intriguing series around the country. We've got Ohio State at Michigan in a rivalry spot. UNCW and Northeastern, that's probably the two best teams in the CAA going at it. DBU going to La Tech. And UConn is at Georgetown. Any of those doing it for you, Peter?
Yeah, Northeastern at UNCW, I think, is going to be a really fascinating one. Two of the best teams in the CAA. Both rosters are pretty prospect-laden. Again, like that series year in and year out is a super interesting one, but especially this year, I'm particularly fired up for it. UNCW 10-2 in the CAA right now, Northeastern 9-3, they're 27-9 in the year. I think that's going to be an excellent, excellent series. And then you mentioned again with the Big East, like Georgetown, I can't believe that I'm saying this. I kind of like Georgetown this weekend, just given how well they pitch. Like this isn't the typical, like it's a very rare down year in UConn. And I think it's much more of like a one-off than it is going to become a trend, just given how outstanding of a job Coach Penders has done. But man, Georgetown can really, really pitch. And Everett Catlett he's a legit guy on that staff. I like the Hoyas this weekend at UConn to notch a pretty big time series win.
I am intrigued by Ohio State, Michigan, not just because of the rivalry aspect and my Midwestern roots, but you've got Michigan, which is just 18-20 overall because they started the season so badly, but they've won their first four Big Ten series. And a couple of those are pretty solid wins. They go at Penn State, Maryland, at Iowa, and home against Minnesota. They win all of those series. Ohio State has the better overall record at 18-15. They did a little bit better in non-conference play. They own a series win at West Virginia. They also got swept by the aforementioned Georgetown Hoyas. Ohio State has a series loss in the Big Ten, but that was at Nebraska. That's as good a series loss as you can get in the Big Ten. They're going to Ann Arbor. I don't know. I don't think Michigan can dig out of its hole. But maybe it can. And meanwhile, Ohio State has like crept into the picture for an at-large bid. The Big Ten is really wide open. We've talked about Nebraska before. We've ranked them. They're coming off of a series loss against Rutgers, and the Big Ten standings are a mess. Big Ten play, that's not uncommon. And it's not like Nebraska's buried. They're just a game in back of Illinois. But things are very tight, and these are two of the better teams, both historically and this season. So I'm intrigued by that one in Ann Arbor.
Yeah, again, you mentioned the rivalry aspect of it. It's going to be a ton of fun. But Ohio State as a team, Michigan's off to a really good start. They're in second place in the Big Ten by, I think, just a game when you iron it out. Like Illinois is in first with a 7-2 conference record, and then it's just a cluster of really like five or so teams behind them. Purdue, very sneaky, 8-4. They had a loud, loud series win last weekend, albeit against Michigan State, but still a very impressive series win nonetheless. Ohio State, though, their pieces on the mat, like they're a very dangerous team, I think. Like if they end up sneaking into a regional, regardless of how they do it, that 1-2 punch of Landon Beetlesheese and Gavin Bruni, I don't know if anyone would say this right now sitting here in Big Ten play, but like Iowa, I know, got a ton of love coming into the preseason, and that staff is still littered with guys who are big time prospects and have thunderous stuff. But from a performance standpoint, that's been probably the best duo in the conference, arguably. Like, again, they're a super sneaky team right now. It's a big test from a conference standpoint going to Michigan. But if they can come away with a series win, like they can really get rolling here. And they have, I think, a pretty winnable series next weekend against Michigan State before you go to Illinois in early May, which is shaping up to be a really important one. So that is certainly a series to kind of keep a close eye on this weekend.
Yeah, both teams have pitched pretty well in conference play. Michigan hasn't been quite as good as Ohio State, but Mitch Voit has been really good. And, he's probably one of the more intriguing players in the conference just from his two-way ability. But he's been better on the mound lately than he has been as a hitter. So he is certainly a player to watch for the Wolverines both this weekend and just going forward in general. We mentioned J.J. Weatherholt's injury. We didn't talk Oregon State, but they suffered potentially a very impactful injury as well. Travis Bezanna.
The optics of that were not good. were not good last night of it.
Yeah, probably worse than Weatherholt even. Bezanna gets hit by a pitch and comes out of the game and then is seen in the dugout wearing some sort of brace situation. We don't know much more than that. They do play again today. I have not seen an Oregon State lineup yet, and I wouldn't even read. If he's in the lineup today, great. Like, read into that what you will, but I wouldn't read anything in. If they sit him against 14 and 18 Nevada in a midweek game, I would not read anything into that necessarily. But it is definitely a major story, both for the Beavers, for the draft, just for college baseball in general. Like, he's a guy that, like, right now I think everybody, the perception is that Charlie Condon is running away with the College Player of the Year award, but in actuality, like, Bezanna is right there with him. It would really be a shame if he has to miss any significant amount of time.
And he is as tough as they come. Like, if he can play through anything, like, he's going to play through it. So, one, I think regardless, I'd be stunned to see him play tonight. I guess whenever you're listening to this now, you'll have known if he played, but I'd be shocked if he does. It would, like you said, it was braced up pretty good last night from some of the pictures that I saw on Twitter. So that is certainly a situation to monitor closely.
Yeah, unfortunately, we had to talk about some injuries here. I feel like the season had gone pretty well from an injury standpoint to major players. I mean, Weatherholt missed a lot of the first half, but we hadn't really dealt with a ton of stuff like this. But maybe there's still some of that to come here in the second half of the season. As Matt Hobbs told me when I was at Arkansas a couple weeks ago, like, if you could just stay healthy, like, if you look at the teams that play deep into June, like, one thing that they often have in common is that they stayed pretty healthy. And some of that's luck, some of it's not luck, but you know, that is an unfortunate piece of how any season plays out.
Yeah, no doubt. I don't even want to say anything to jinx it, but you're right. Outside of like last night and I guess Weatherholt going down, it's been a successful season in that regard. So I'll knock on some wood here, but hopefully those two can get back and healthy, because college baseball is a lot better when they're playing.
Alrighty. Well, a big week ahead. We'll be back here next week with another edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. So make sure you're subscribed to the Baseball America Podcast on your favorite podcasting app, be that Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can follow Peter on Twitter at Peter G. Flaherty. I'm at Ted Cahill. And everything that you want to read is over at baseballamerica.com. So make sure to check that out throughout the weekend as well. Until next week, enjoy the baseball. For Peter, I'm Teddy. We'll talk to you then.